This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
Say goodbye to performance-robbing engine deposits with Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline. Hate to break it to you, but lower-grade fuel can leave deposits in your engine that build up over time and leave your engine's performance severely lacking. Thankfully, Shell V-Power Nitro Plus removes up to 100% of performance-robbing deposits with continuous use in gasoline direct injection engine fuel injectors. Download the Shell app today to find your nearest Shell station and rejuvenate your engine with Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline. Fuel up at Shell.
Thank you for joining us on Twitter Spaces. I'm CBS News political correspondent Caitlin Huey Burns. We are less than 24 hours away from the 2022 midterm elections, and there has already been historic voter turnout. So we want to talk about the role of women in the midterms, and we have some of the best in the business joining us today. We have evening news anchor and managing editor, of course, Nora O'Donnell, and Face the Nation moderator Margaret Brennan, CBS News correspondent and host of The Talk, Natalie Morales, and I want to start with CBS News congressional correspondent Nicole Killian.
So I know you were basically living in Georgia at this point. You've been on the road for us covering the crucial Senate race and the governor's race there as well. And I know you've interviewed all the candidates, been on all the buses. You probably have a lot of hotel points at this point. But what's interesting, I think, of something that you've been covering, especially, and I think that's something that's undercovered, is the role of Black women in these midterms. I mean, you have some history-making bids from some candidates in governor's races and Senate races, and I know you've been doing a lot of reporting on this, and I'm wondering, you know, what you've found and who you've talked to.
Yeah, well, good to join you, Caitlin. And I literally am on the road because I just pulled off of a highway exit.
So okay, well, I'm glad you're not driving.
You are literally getting me fresh on the campaign trail.
Live
but
from
the car. I'm sure, exactly. But I'm sure you could relate. But look, I think one of the remarkable things about Georgia is the history-making races that are in this state. And I think that's why a lot of people are paying attention to what's happening in Georgia right now, and also why you're seeing this record level of turnout. We learned over the weekend that more than 2.5 million people have cast their ballots in early voting, which is an all-time record for the state in terms of midterm elections. So that really says a lot. And as you mentioned, you know, there is a critical race not only for the U.S. Senate, but also for the governor's mansion. And so certainly we are witnessing right now Stacey Abrams trying to mount another bid against Governor Brian Kemp. This is a rematch from 2018. And while the governor has maintained an edge over Stacey Abrams in the polls, she and her team remain determined in their bid. And if she is able to unseat the governor, she would become the first Black woman in U.S. history to be a governor. And that is quite significant. You know, when I first learned about that statistic, I really had to do a double take, because you look at the fact that we have someone like Vice President Kamala Harris, who was the first woman vice president, first woman of color to become vice president. You look at former President Barack Obama, first African-American president. And so even with all of this precedent on the presidential level, and even in Congress, we have yet to see a Black woman in an executive role in any state in this country. And so that's why this race matters, win or lose. You have a number of African-American women who have mounted bids for the governorship. Right now, one of the last women standing, in addition to Stacey Abrams, is Deidre DeGeer in Iowa, who is running against Kim Reynolds. And so this really is about, for these women in particular, I think, trying to lay the groundwork and lay a path for other women potentially to come behind them, whether or not they are successful in their own bids tomorrow night.
Yeah, Nicole, that's fascinating, especially what you said about, you know, 2 years ago, Kamala Harris being, you know, obviously came into the vice presidency, but then you look at the Senate and there isn't that representation. So it'll be really interesting to watch those races, that North Carolina race in particular. Nicole, I think another interesting thing about Georgia is, you know, we're covering these races with the backdrop of the Supreme Court decision on Dobbs and what it means in terms of motivating voters. But Georgia, you know, hits differently because of these allegations against Herschel Walker. And I know you've been at so many different events of his and you've covered his campaign very thoroughly. And I'm wondering if that's had an impact on voters that you talk to. I'm curious kind of how they have been assessing the news of that and the reports, and, you know, whether they believe this is an issue that they're voting on. And also, I know you've been covering a lot of Warnock events too. I'm wondering if it comes up.
Well, I would note two things. You know, I would note broadly speaking, and, you know, I think that this also speaks to the reporting that you have and that we've seen across the country, is that this issue of abortion rights has really galvanized women in particular, whether you look at states like Kansas, whether you look at New York State, for instance. But here in Georgia, it does play a little differently from the standpoint of the state does have a fetal heartbeat law in effect, which bans abortions at 6 weeks. And so it is a concern just about every time, in particular, when you speak to Democratic women, more specifically, who are concerned about their rights going forward, not only in their own state, but also on a national level. And so time and again, when we do talk to voters and ask them what is driving them to the polls, what is the number one issue for them, by and large, many female voters have told us this issue of abortion rights and reproductive rights are essential. And that's why they're supporting the Democratic ticket, because they want those rights restored. On the flip side, in terms of Republican women, what's interesting when you do look at a candidate like Senate nominee Herschel Walker, a political newcomer, former football star, Heisman Trophy winner in the state, he has had to battle a lot of different headlines throughout the course of his candidacy, most notably and most recently, these allegations that he paid for the abortions of two women, one of whom did come forward publicly on camera, another who spoke to a number of media outlets. And Herschel Walker has continued to deny these stories, although in the case of one woman, he did come out and say that, you know, he was involved with this woman and that he did, in fact, write her a check. He just didn't know what it was used for. But that being said, you know, when you talk to women at his rallies, many of them are willing to look away from this. You know, they either think that this is just a hit job by Democrats trying to sully Walker's record, or they look at it from the vantage point of they feel that, you know, everyone makes mistakes in their lives. And so, you know, they are willing to look past his fault, because no one is perfect. And at the end of the day, it is about supporting the Republican ticket and Republican values. And that's whether you talk to women who support Herschel Walker, or in many cases, men who support Herschel Walker. Of course, some would say there's some hypocrisy in his viewpoint because he has been very clear that he is against abortion. And his position has shifted on this quite a bit, quite frankly, because over the summer, he was asked several times if he supports a national abortion ban. And his response was that he did, without exceptions. And he has since shifted, most recently in the debate that occurred between Walker and Senator Warnock back in October, where he says that he now supports Georgia's law, which does allow for some exceptions. So his position has shifted a little bit. How that will play and resonate with those who have not yet voted, I think, remains to be seen. But it is certainly something that has galvanized. Well, I don't want to say galvanized. It's probably not the right word, but it certainly has been a big talker, if you will, on the trail.
Hi, Nicole. Hi, Caitlin. It's Nora O'Donnell here joining in your discussion.
Hey, y'all. It's Margaret Brennan. I just joined as well.
Hi, Margaret. Yes, we were just
everywhere. And Natalie Morales. I'm here, too. I finally figured out I have to turn the mic on to get onto Twitter Spaces.
Well, welcome. I'm so excited to be talking to all of you here. And then, of course, on election night. And just to pick up on when Nicole was talking about on abortion. Margaret, I know abortion is on the ballot in 5 states. What else will you be watching? Margaret?
Margaret, just press the mic is on.
I but did. Natalie gave me the pro tip. And
that's
yet,
what I did.
Yes. So you're right, Nora. It's directly on the ballot as a standalone issue in 5 states, Vermont, Kentucky, California, Michigan, and Montana in some form. But it's also something Democrats have tried to make a national issue to rally, in particular, women, Democratic women. And I know CBS estimates there'll be about 24% of likely voters. But as you well know, this is a complex issue, and it's not at all clear that it will drive turnout in any way that could make a difference for Democrats on a national scale, because as we're seeing, the pressure from inflation and the economy are really kind of a headwind that's hurting them right now. But we're also seeing, you know, it's local. In some states, like the state of Nevada, abortion is guaranteed up until 24 weeks, after which case there are restrictions based on the health of the mother. You could get a late term abortion. It's kind of a complicated emotional issue that is hard to paint with a broad brush. And that's one of the things that I always keep in mind when we're talking about abortion on Face the Nation, that it's not, this is one of the most emotional issues that people react to. And I think in June, and I remember sitting with you on set, Nora, when Roe versus Wade was struck down, the immediate shock from it. And then all of a sudden, people had to rush and figure out exactly what their state law was, exactly what the restrictions were and what they aren't. And in some places like Nevada, maybe some of these women are realizing, oh, that's guaranteed. You know what's not? The price of gas. And I'm really animated by that. So there's these interesting dynamics, because as we all know, you know, women are not a monolithic group.
Those are excellent points. And it is something we're going to be following so closely on election night. Natalie Morales is on, is in Los Angeles and will be joining us to get us on some of those West Coast races. And Natalie, it's interesting,
yeah.
You know, California, all 52 congressional seats have been redistricted. There's a lot going on.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. And people don't typically think of California as, you know, obviously it's such a blue state. You don't think that, oh, well, this could be a key state that could be very decisive when it comes to who may have the balance of power in the House. But we may not know tomorrow night. There are 4 seats that are likely toss-ups from the Central Valley to Orange County. So these are seats that we're going to be watching. We may not know the results tomorrow night until, you know, Wednesday morning. And that, you know, that question of who will be in control when it comes to the House, that may be something that may take some time until those votes are all counted. But we also talked about, you know, the power of women in this election. Some of the key races that I'm watching here on the West Coast as well feature women prominently. In Oregon, you have 3 women in a very hotly contested governor's race right now. And what's very interesting there is that, I mean, again, Oregon, a bastion blue state, but here you're seeing Christine Drazen is the Republican candidate who could possibly end up being the next governor in Oregon to be the first time in 40 years. So a history-making run possibly there, and also a major upset potentially in Washington State in the Senate race, where you have Tiffany Smiley, who's a relative newcomer, and some have called her one of the Republicans have called her one of the best candidates of this cycle, going up against a very seasoned five-term Senator Patty Murray. So you have somebody who has been there for a long time and has done the job, but yet there's this feeling of dissatisfaction, discontent here along the West Coast when it comes to crime, homelessness, inflation, all of the issues that I think are driving voters very much, I think, what are at the forefront for women as well. We talk about abortion. California, as you mentioned, one of the five states that has abortion Proposition 1, where they would hope to codify abortion if it passes. But, you know, other big issues here are those issues that I think are in a lot of big cities and states, which are, look at our urban areas, like in New York, what we're dealing with crime and homelessness. And there is a sense of, you know, how much momentum will there be towards, you know, Republican candidates versus the Democratic candidates?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, Natalie, just as you said, I mean, we're going to be covering this and we'll be on the air. And there's a lot of races in the West. I mean, we'll get a sense whether this is a Republican ripple or a tsunami based on some of those races in the West. And then you mentioned Washington State. This is one that Republicans say this is going to be their bonus. You know, they think it's going to be their bonus. I can remember covering Senator Patty Murray, elected in 1992, part of the Year of the Woman. She was known as the mom in tennis shoes. And now she's running against a political neophyte, Jennifer Smiley, who's got a bus that says there's a new mom in town. I mean, her husband injured a veteran who she has taken care of as a nurse and advocated on behalf of. Just really, really interesting races. So I'm glad you're going to be joining us as well, Natalie. I want to touch base back again with Margaret Brennan, because Margaret, one of the things you've been talking about too is parents and suburban women. What have you seen in the last couple of weeks about how their vote may be moving?
Well, you know, Nora, I think this is one of the things that we see in our pressured parents category, and that's how at CBS News we're referring to them, and they're about 13%, according to our Anthony Salvanto's brilliant analysis. They're 13% of likely voters. In this category, I basically put all the trauma all of us lived through for the past 3 years through COVID and in this pandemic haze. And all of it goes to the educational declines that we have seen that are measurable now, that even the Biden administration calls appalling. You look at all the difficulties with mental health, all the things. And the assumption here is who is the main caregiver? Typically still, even these days, it is the woman. And for Republicans, if you look at the state of Virginia, for example, where Glenn Youngkin rode that powerful message of parental rights to a victory in the state of Virginia, you know, he really was a message to the rest of the Republican Party that this was a live nerve and potentially could really help Republicans. And you've seen this embraced in this campaign trail, on the campaign trail. Democrats haven't messaged as much around education. And in some ways, perhaps it was a lost opportunity. Terry McAuliffe, who lost to Glenn Youngkin, would tell you he misread the politics of the moment. So this is one of the things on the minds of parents.
Can I ask you about that? Because as you said, Republicans have perhaps been skillful about messaging to address some of these concerns. And Kevin McCarthy, who hopes to be the next Speaker of the House, has outlined his commitment to America. And one of them is a parent's bill of rights. And he's talking about recovering learning, lost learning from COVID, to ensure only women can play in women's sports, expanding parental choice. What does that mean?
Well, exactly. Because if you're actually talking about measuring and making up for lost time in the classroom, for example, if you blame this all on remote learning in certain school districts, and this varied around the country, how long kids were out of the classroom, then that parental bill of rights should include some kind of analysis on how to help your kid regain lost ground. Instead, a lot of the culture war issues here are framed around the classroom. It comes down to how gender issues are taught, that you just referred to, race in the state of Virginia, the critical race theory, which is taught at the academic level of a university and not for small children, that was really weaponized. And so there is just this sense, in my understanding of it, that there is this disoriented feeling among many Americans. There is this feeling of lack of control. And we've seen that in our polling. 79% of Americans say they feel the country is out of control. And how do you control it? Sometimes these narrow issues, these wedge issues, are a way to reestablish control versus how do you make up for all the time you just lost? And there's just this thing of trauma that hangs with us in so many different ways from the pandemic that I don't think we've quite figured out how to quantify yet. And these parental rights, you know, lack of control and then reasserting your rights. There's something there in terms of the psyche of where a lot of Americans are, or certainly a lot of American women.
Wow. Margaret, yeah, you said that really well. I know everybody's out on the campaign trail and has got interviews set up. So I just want to thank everybody for joining us. Caitlin Huing Burns, Nicole Killian, Margaret Brennan, Natalie Morales. Thank you all. And we look forward to seeing you. Caitlin Huing Burns, we look forward to seeing all of you on CBS, starting with the CBS Evening News at 6:30 p.m. and then at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 o'clock Pacific. Thank you.
Thanks.
Great to be with you.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and host of the Money Watch podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary. It is a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money, and maybe more importantly, on your life. Follow Money Watch wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free on the Amazon Music or Wondery app.
It was the biggest scandal in pop music. The stars of Milli Vanilli, the Grammy-winning multi-platinum R&B phenomenon, were exposed as frauds. But none of this was their idea. So whose idea was it? Enter German music producer Frank Farian. He saw the success of acts like Michael Jackson and Prince, and he wanted in, no matter the cost. So he devised the perfect pop heist. Two once-in-a-lifetime talents who were charismatic, full of sex appeal, and phenomenal dancers. The only problem? They couldn't sing. But Frank knew just how to fix that. Wondery's new podcast, Blame It on the Fame, dives into one of pop music's greatest controversies and takes a never-before-heard look at the exploitation of two young Black artists. Milli Vanilli set the world on fire, but when the truth came out, Rob and Fab were the only ones who got burned. Looking back now, it's hard not to wonder, why did everyone blame them and not the man pulling the strings? Follow Blame It on the Fame, Milli Vanilli, on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of Blame It on the Fame early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
The Hargan women seem to have it all.
From the outside looking in, we were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But as detectives would soon learn, there was a lot going on inside the Hargan household.
Ashley and I have been calling my mom and the house and Helen. No one's answering.
63-year-old Pamela Hargan gunned down in her own home. Her youngest daughter, Helen, lay dead upstairs.
Patrol, when they arrived, assumed or thought that there might have been a murder-suicide.
But for the detectives on the scene,
there were things about the scene itself that were concerning to us on day one.
Who would want to kill their mother and their little sister?
There is no boogeyman here. It is exactly who we think it is.
I'm Peter Van Sant from 48 Hours. This is Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings early and ad-free on the 48 Hours Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts.